As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your most favorite off-season baseball show, Under the Radar, part of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. With me, as always, your friend and mine, Derek Harbaugh.
Good morning.
My friend and yours, Ian Kahn.
What's up, my friends? I got to say, we're all a little juicy this morning based on our pre-show banter.
Pre-show banter is pretty good. We even got an off-show ding, which was...
Yes, we did.
I wonder if you do that in real life.
I actually never do it, but when I'm with you guys, I do it because I was talking about James Anderson ding, and I was talking about the fact that my new Dynasty rankings had come out, and that James had sort of very nicely said something to the effect last week of, hey, you know, a lot of subscribers are asking if maybe you're going to maybe bring out those Dynasty rankings. And I was like, dude, I'm so slammed at work. I'm thinking like December 5th. And he's like, no worries. And then I woke up on Saturday and I was like, do your freaking rankings. I'd done a bit of them, but then I really like locked in and I was like, all right, I'm doing this. And I did them and I'm happy overall. Although I have a feeling we're going to discuss them today.
Well, today was going to be the rankings show. DVR's rankings are out, obviously, on The Athletic. Ian's rankings are out on jamesanderson.net. So
RotoWire.
I know. I'm joking.
Come on.
I figured we'd pull them up and compare and contrast, but then DVR went and wrote this great rundown. So
I know, it's really good. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
It will come in and out. I mean, these players that DVR wrote about are all obviously ranked. So I feel like there's a little door that we can open up.
Huh, I love it.
No?
I'll love it.
Thank you. DVR caught some heat from Rachel Luba for having Trevor Bauer ranked 9th overall in the starting pitchers. You moved him up to 8th, I saw. Coward.
I moved Max Scherzer down, and Bauer just moved up by virtue of being in a position, you know, above where Scherzer ended up. To be totally clear, I did not move Trevor Bauer up.
That was fantastic.
Was that great?
That cameo. Oh, my God. Nando DeFino, genius. You are a genius.
No,
you're legitimately. No, you're
look, it all happened here. This is a group effort, actually. We all talked about this together on the last show.
Did we talk about it on the show or after the show?
I think it was during the show.
Was it? By the way, only like 3 people asked for the Listen Gary Marshall video, so I'm not going to post that.
I'm sure a lot of people did. A lot more than three. They probably went to your other Ian Kahn account by accident.
No, that one I'm watching more closely now because it's fantasy football season, at which time I do not spend much time on my Ian Kahn 4 because I don't follow fantasy football.
You know, you can anymore. Do a thing where you can create a list and just follow the fantasy baseball player and then just pull up that list.
Yeah, but a lot of the fantasy baseball guys are in fantasy. Like you. You're in fantasy football world. DVR's in fantasy football world. He'll throw some baseball in there too. But that's cool. I mean, I do check over there every once in a while, but... I can like get my notifications.
Look, I'll be the first to admit, if you follow me, you're basically just getting a bunch of retweets. It's like I'm not an entertaining follow, but you will get interesting things. But
you're an entertaining fellow.
I'm an entertaining fellow. All right, so let's start with I want to dig into some DVR stuff, but I do think like the Charlie Morton news, since we're one of the only shows in town, we should probably talk about that. People kind of getting excited about the Charlie Morton, Drew Smyly, Max Fried, Ian Anderson. I can't remember who the fifth guy. Oh, Mike Soroka, off the top of my head.
Soroka, I'm not sure he's going to be back. Could be Kyle Wright. Could be Bryce Wilson, right?
It just seems like we're in the same spot again. Like, they signed two big players, and it still seems like, well, we're still talking about Kyle Wright at the end of this rotation.
Yeah, but you're not talking about Cole. I never liked the $16 million Cole Hamels deal. I said that at the time. I just did. I mean, obviously, it looks, you know, dumb now.
I don't remember you saying that on the show.
No, I was pretty clear about that. I was pretty clear. Yeah, pretty clear. I love the Charlie Morton pickup. I mean, I think, and he got it cheap. Somehow, Morton just always goes cheap. Can I say that you remember me talking about how much I love Drew Smyly as an under-the-radar player for the last year and a half coming off of Tommy John because of the World Baseball Classic and what I saw there where I was like, oh, that's a special arm. What he did in San Francisco, I'm kind of surprised he got such a big contract, the $11 million contract, but delighted for him and kind of sad because I was going to try to grab him in a lot of different places this year. But based on rankings, DVR, don't you have him at like 68? Is that right?
Yeah,
Drew Smyly?
I think 68th among pitchers sounds about right. And he's
that's really high, man.
I just think he's going to be more good than bad. I mean, 68 is a range where you're not putting someone in your lineup and just leaving them in there. But the K rate was through the roof. And if you give him more innings per outing, I would assume the velocity comes down. If the velocity comes down, the Ks come down. But I've always liked Smyly. I've always thought there was another level that he could reach. Yep. If you go back to his time, both in Detroit and with the Rays, early part of the time there. I mean, he was good, like a low threes ERA, a good whip, decent number of strikeouts. It just seems like he's getting back closer to that level again. So I think part of the reason I held back is just concerns about how effective he'll be used like a more traditional starter again. But if I was worried he was going to fall on his face, he'd be ranked a lot lower. Definitely someone I like as kind of a SP5, I guess you'd say, you know, somebody that's in your lineup more than he's out, but then still sits against some of the more difficult opponents that he sees.
Ian, how do you approach Charlie Morton in a dynasty league? I mean, it seems like, you know, when you have these players who kind of reinvent themselves and have like this kind of like late career awesomeness, I guess Rich Hill might be like a good comparison for Charlie Morton, maybe the closest. But I mean, you know, Rich Hill 5 years ago, and almost like Nelson Cruz, well, Nelson Cruz always kind of did it. But like these guys who are like after the kind of quote unquote like reinvention or second wind or whatever you call it, they have like a nice run of 5 or 6 years. Right? I mean, it's hard to measure, isn't it? Like normally.
Charlie Morton is a great trade candidate everywhere, right? So if you have him and you're not competing now, you should get something for him that will go pretty well for you. And if you're in competition and you're going for the championship, then you keep Charlie Morton because he's a really good pitcher. The problem with Morton for me, and the reason he's at 220 on my rankings, as opposed to Scherzer, who's at like, I think 90 on my rankings. Hold on, let me double check where he is. They're sort of similar for me in a way. God, yeah, 91 for Max Scherzer. Isn't that something?
The thing about
we could go deep into that if you want. But the reason for Morton is he really didn't pitch much during the regular season. He pitched great in the playoffs and looked good. I don't know if he pitched great, but he pitched in the playoffs. Regular season, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that out of him, where you get really 90 really good innings out of him, but they'll be good innings. You know that they'll be good innings. It's like Rich Hill. You're going to get 60 innings out of Rich Hill, not 90. Scherzer, I think you'll get more, but yeah, man. I mean, to me, I get rid of Nelson Cruz when I can. I try to find that team that's like, you know what? I just am sick and tired of this waiting around business. And then trade them guys like that.
But I mean,
they'll be better that year, but then I can improve long term. You know, we go back to the Jason Dominguez for Charlie Blackman and Charlie Morton deal, right?
And of course, that's what everyone thinks of when they think of Charlie Morton.
Deal. They should. Yeah. That's the thing I think of. But if I had gone a different way and I didn't take Jason Dominguez, right? I ended up with Rutschman. I had the first and fourth pick in that draft. I'll always remember this. With the first pick, I went Jason Dominguez. Had I gone Andrew Vaughn, that trade would look better. Because Vaughn's a skip away, and God knows I know how much our partner, Derek Van Riper, likes Andrew Vaughn. You want to tell everybody, Derek Van Riper?
I just think he's got a path to the big leagues, and everything about him is what we want from a fantasy first base DH type, right? It's all just mashing. And Encarnacion's gone. I don't think they're going to sign a veteran. The path is wide, wide open. But the question I had for you is about Rutschman.
Yeah.
I look at Rutschman, and you've got him second in your dynasty ranks at the catcher position. He's behind only JT Realmuto, and in the overall ranks, it's only by a handful of spots. So they're reasonably close when you factor in, you know, age and the fact that Rutschman should come up be a workhorse and also provide a little bit of everything behind the plate offensively, with the exception of steals. You're not looking for those for most catchers anyway, but it says a lot about the position as a whole if a guy that hasn't played yet is second at the position, doesn't it? I mean, is it just a total punt situation in dynasty leagues with catchers because it can take so much longer than you want?
Never punt catching. Don't punt catching. If you punt catching and someone else has JT Realmuto, you're losing 20 home runs, 7 stolen bases, and a 300 batting average, right? So why? Here's what I read this morning about Adley Rutschman, which makes me feel even better about my number 60. This is in Baseball America, which is a fine site. Rutschman refined his spring at the alternate site over the summer and showed off the finished product in instructs. He showed the ability to hit for power, hit for average, and played at least above average defense behind the plate. Here we go. Here comes the good stuff. Beyond his tools, Rutschman's polish stood out prominently. Evaluators opined, I like that word, that he was not only ready for the major leagues, but that he would be one of MLB's best catchers immediately. And that's at the age of 21.
What you just read, forget about Adley Rutschman for a minute. It's so daunting to think about this year how much more we are going to have to read, because there are no reports coming out of those instructs camps and the alternate satellite camps. Like, usually you can just look at, you know, go to Baseball Reference, look at the minor league stats, but people for baseball this year, you start reading now, man. And we got to start encouraging like beat writers to write about this stuff, because we're just relying on the eyes and like rumors and what we hear. Like, this is going to be crazy. Like, I knew it was going to be crazy, but like, just how you read just that one paragraph on him is nuts.
But listen, I have Rutschman at 60. Who would you rather have, Rutschman or Max Fried, in a dynasty league for the next 16 years?
Well, all right.
How about just like the next five? Five's probably okay. Long enough, right? In terms of how much those guys are going to make an impact.
In trade talks, because this dynasty ranks is also like how I think people are valued trade wise. It's a big part of it.
Yeah.
I still have Starling Marte too high. I just listen to DVR too much. But Rutschman, to me, like, who I have Rutschman at 60 and I have Realmuto at 52. I think that Rutschman is going to be not as good as Realmuto now. But he will be as good as Realmuto is now in about 3 years. And then we're going to have another 10 years of Rutschman as opposed to Realmuto. Realmuto's got about 4 really good years left, I think. Maybe 3. But Rutschman is not even coming close to touching his prime. Now, you can Matt Wieters me all you want and say, sounds familiar, dude. And then I'll take it, you know, and I'll have to agree with you if that's how things play out. But Rutschman is a special, special talent. He's going to be the number one catcher in dynasty leagues for a very, very long time. And to me, if you can lock in a Will Smith, a Joey Bart, a Rutschman, your team is better. It's like, I'll make a point real quick. At number 28, 29, I have Raul Mondesi Jr. Why so high with an average like that and with the inconsistency and all this other stuff? Well, because every league I was in last year, the team who had Raul Mondesi Jr. won. Every league, he won.
But he went on a crazy steals run at the end.
And that is a difference maker. And to put a difference maker on your team changes the equation. And that's what Realmuto is. I'm going to spend up for him in drafts this year, and that's what Rutschman's going to be. So, you know, that's how I feel about it, and that's why he's so high.
Ian, is Realmuto a difference maker for you in dynasty or in single season? Because someone could
single
make,
season.
Oh, I mean,
yeah, but also dynasty. I mean, if you're competing, he's 31. What is he now? What is he? DVR, you know what he is.
Realmuto is 29.
He's 29. Jesus. So I mean, that's really good. I mean, that's really so good, guys. He's like a great baseball player and a great, he's going to start. I think he's going to end up with the Mets on a 5-year, $125 million contract. Write it down.
So here's the follow-up question I have. You basically expect Adley Rutschman to be like Buster Posey was for the first 7 or 8 years of his career. And then you're expecting, you know, a really good foundation, very usable player for another 7 or 8 years beyond that. I mean, that's the sort of trajectory he's got to be on. And it makes sense with the plate skills. And if you think about the key difference, hitting in Baltimore versus hitting in San Francisco would presumably give Adley Rutschman a higher offensive ceiling if he has equal core skills to what Posey brought into the league over 10 years ago.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, thank you for that in-depth answer.
I think if you're in a position where you have Rutschman and you're on the brink of competing in a dynasty league, I think there's at least a chance that his value is actually at a peak right now. Like, obviously, there's a chance it goes right, and that might even be equal to the chances that it goes wrong. But I think we've seen so many catchers because of the wear and tear of the position, because of the responsibilities defensively, kind of slowing the progress with the bat. We've seen enough of that over the years where I think you could make a compelling argument that trading Rutschman for something that will help you a lot now and later is a good idea.
Like who?
I'm not talking about trading him for old guys, but I'm saying...
No, like, I get it.
Let's say you are missing a pitcher, right? You need a pitcher to go all in for this year. Fried was the example you brought up before, but Zach Michael Gallen...
Because he's one ahead.
Would you, if you needed a pitcher, if you were like a pitcher away in a dynasty league, Zach Gallen for Adley Rutschman right now, is that really something you'd turn down?
Well, I have Gallen at 46, so I guess not. But it would make me sad.
It's a fair, trade, right? Because you feel you feel a sense of loss, I mean, giving away
like
Rutschman.
Tyler Glasnow for Rutschman. Okay, yeah, I guess I can see that for sure. Because you're getting, you know, I have you Darvish ahead of him. I wouldn't make that trade. It makes me want to move Darvish down because I wouldn't trade. I wouldn't trade Rutschman. Look, in our XFL league, which I'm super grateful to be teamed with Steve Gardner in, and it's the granddaddy of all the leagues. I mean, this is the one. I traded Steve
Wars
and I.
Listening.
Well, it's actually all the Tout Wars guys. So it's all it's the board members of Tout Wars. But it's the granddaddy of all keeper leagues, I should say. Keeper / dynasty leagues. I traded Bryce Harper on a $28 contract, which will go up to $31, $34, $37, for Andrew Vaughn and Adley Rutschman. Jeff Erickson is going for it this year. He's going to have Harper at a good price for the next 3-4 years, and I'm going to get Rutschman and Vaughn for the next 10 years at a really good price. That was but I have Harper at 15 on this list, and I have Rutschman and Vaughn at 60 and 63.
I think it makes sense to do the trade as you did it. I think I prefer in that league to be on the side that got both Rutschman and Vaughn. I think it's difficult to look at the 10-year window, though, because the back half of that 10-year window almost certainly won't be as good as the first half, right? For a Hall of Famer, an inner circle Hall of Famer, it can be. But for most players, you're going to get that peak pretty quickly, you know, 3-4 years of really good production, and then that sort of slow taper where they're undervalued maybe because of how the contracts work. They're absolutely fine players that you're going to have that you're using to contend for multiple championships, but they're not the guys that are total difference makers in the back half of that window. I think it's sometimes tricky.
Freddie Freeman?
Yeah, like if Freddie Freeman, probably more in that first group of future inner circle Hall of Famer, right? I mean, Freddie Freeman.
Bryce Harper?
And Harper's at the back part of that trajectory now.
Yeah, Christian Yelich, Nolan Arenado.
And Yelich wasn't Yelich right away. I mean, that's the thing, too.
No, no, like agreed. And there may be, look, Victor Robles is down in the 80s on this list. So there are dips and valleys, for sure. There are dips and valleys are really the same thing. There are peaks and valleys for these players. There are peaks and valleys. I agree with that. But the upside of a young bat, it's just you can't touch it, man. The upside of young bats and the value of that. Because again, think about May 1st. What am I getting for Adley Rutschman on May 1st when a team that thought that they were competing for the championship has the three injuries that kills them, and then they give you three amazing players for that one young bat? That's how I build teams.
Let me just, I just want to bring this up because you guys got me thinking about this and I was quietly typing. Here's the 2016 top catcher prospects. Because I think we're talking about Adley Rutschman as a sure thing. And in my experience, I found, and I think DVR kind of noted it in the rundown too, like catching prospects are weird, man. So here's,
yep, they are.
Here's 2016, Wilson Contreras, and this is MLB.com. Wilson Contreras, Gary Sanchez, Jorge Alfaro, Reese McGuire, Tyler Stevenson, Elias Diaz, Dom Nunez, Jacob Nottingham, Max Pentecost, and Aramis Garcia. And then in 2017, Carson Kelly was number one, Francisco Mejia, Jorge Alfaro, Zach Collins, Chance Sisko, Reese McGuire, Tom Murphy, Austin Barnes, Jose Trevino, and Jacob Nottingham again, who had been traded to the A's, to the Brewers in that time. So that's all I'm saying.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Well, no, but see, but here's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, don't go buy the fifth ranked prospect. Go get the number one ranked prospect. Because the number one ranked prospect in 2016 was Wilson Contreras. The highest that he ever was on a list was in the 30s. Okay? Pretty much. Rutschman is not just the number one catcher. I believe on MLB, he's the number one prospect as well. Am I correct?
Would they knock ahead of Wanda Franco?
You're right there, so I'm not going to go.
I just looked up catchers. Hold on, I'll go look.
Well, just look up the 2020 prospects right now, and I'm pretty sure you're going to see Rutschman in that top five because they're also taking fielding into account, which is slightly different than in fantasy.
Right. I mean, it's all this. No, MLB looks like they got Franco, Rutschman, Mackenzie Gore, Spencer Torkelson, Casey Mize.
Okay, so number two. Yeah. So it's Franco and then Rutschman. Franco and then Rutschman, right?
That's so correct, sir.
And right behind Wander Franco, who is the consensus number one prospect that we've seen in a very, very, very long time, which in 6 years when he's struggling and DVR is like, hey, he's not that good. And Nando and I are still going to be like, you know, he was the number one prospect, a la Jerickson Profar. But my point is that when you have a guy who's that elite, you grab him, you get him, because elite don't come along that often.
Fangraphs has time we third. Had,
when was the last time we had a catcher in the top five? It's been a while. This is a special player. It was what they said. They said right now he would be in the major leagues and he would already be one of the best catchers. I'll sink or swim. I'll die on this. Die on the mountain? What do they call it?
Die on this hill?
I'll die on the Adley Rutschman hill. I will.
That's weird. You would know a old-fashioned military reference.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, shout out to the Mount Vernon, Daughters of Mount Vernon Society?
Yes, okay.
I bought
the
some
Ladies of Mount Vernon.
Ladies of Mount Vernon, that's it. I bought some Christmas gifts from them. The emails finally worked. And they actually
suckered your ass.
Oh, you know what? They were cool. They actually, that entire catalog is very, very cool. And I got like six things.
My Mount Vernon mug is, I enjoy thoroughly, I have to say.
Well, they had like a tea party, tea kettle, Christmas ornament that just says no stamp tax on it. It's like a mini little teapot.
Right. Tea party from the
17th. They got a suffragette. Anyway, yeah, go check it out. It's
good stuff.
Yeah, I think it is good stuff, man. It's, you know, Ian.
There's a, at least,
you should buy, I'm telling you, man, you got to buy some of this stuff, autograph it, and auction it off for charity, dude.
I mean, okay. All right. They sent me a pen.
All right, well, you can use that.
No, listen, they sent me this pen, which is made from a tree on the grounds, which is super cool. And now I'm doing this event for the Museum of the American Revolution in the next like 2 weeks, where it's like for big donors and stuff. And it's called Being George Washington, and myself and two other, the George Washington from Mount Vernon and a George Washington from Hamilton. The three of us are getting together, and I had to sign like 100 like book things. And I use the pen. I don't like signing things. It hurt my hand.
Never mind. Maybe this is a bad idea then.
Yeah.
Sorry, charity.
We've got DVR for that.
DVR should be signing autographs. Yeah.
Seriously, but DVR is the king of charity.
Nobody wants my autograph, though.
I'm telling you, people love you, dude.
Yeah, DVR.
They love you. And they love your voice. And they love Nando's voice. And they think my voice is fine.
God. And then I think they rank us by humility. Ian, number one. And then no. Faux humility, also number one.
No, say go F yourself. What? I didn't mean that. All right, so that's my point on Adley Rutschman, and I think that is only going to grow. I think that but DVR makes a good point. If you can get a windfall for him, do it. But don't make it like Max Scherzer, Nelson Cruz, and Charlie Morton, because you're going all in for 1 year. How I think about it is, you want to combine the number of years that you're going to get. Let's say if you're trading for Rutschman, if you ask me Real Muto straight up for Rutschman, what I do is I'll do the math of how many years are left in that career and years of greatness. I actually think, I mean, now I'm like trying to think that maybe I should move Rutschman up, because I actually think that I would strongly consider Real Muto for Rutschman. I would.
Oh yeah, but you, I mean, like, look, where's Spencer Torkelson in your dynasty ranks?
Spencer Torkelson is super fun. And because he's so super fun and super, super savvy, he is number 42 on my list. Right. So he's above. But see, that's the other thing, DVR, that you didn't say, is we also have Jared Kelenic at 37. I got Julio Rodriguez at 40. Torkelson at 42.
Where's Pete Alonso?
I got some blowback from that, from James Anderson. Ding.
Was he too low?
Well, I don't think he's too low. I moved him up after James was like, really? Can you really? You're really putting him that low?
So he was like, too low.
No, he goes, he does. He said, why? I said, he does too many commercials. He goes, that's not a really good reason. I have him.
But you know, you're going to be right. I mean, you've won Tout Wars. Well, you finished top two Tout Wars last 2 years.
Well, I won Tout Wars last year. I know. I tied Tout. I don't want to talk about it.
You've averaged 1.5 in Tout Wars the last 2 years.
Which Brian Walton said to me is going to feel better once the overall Tout Wars comes out. Congratulations, by the way, to our friend Todd Zola for being inducted into the Hall of Fame for fantasy sports. I called him and just shamed him with congratulations. He was like, oh, Ian, that's enough. Pete Alonso is at number 67 on this list.
Todd's one of the great guys in the business.
He's a great guy. Yeah. He really is great.
In the world. In the world.
Okay, I wasn't going that far. Yeah. Pete Alonso, 67 on the list. What do you think?
I mean, actually, I'm surprised he made your top 100.
DVR?
I think it's about right. I think we've seen his flaws. We've seen his ceiling. I think he's already a little older than you realize at 25, which isn't old and means he's going to crash. But I think my previous fears that he's a little bit similar to Rhys Hoskins were realized in the shortened season. And I look at where Rhys Hoskins is at 203 overall. Seeing Alonso at 67 seems high enough based on how my mind works and how I sort of compare those two players.
That's awesome. I'll tell you this. I really like that analysis. You know why I have him so low, comparably so low? I don't know how other people do. I don't know where other people have him on their dynasty list. I'm excited. Cockcroft's list should be coming out pretty soon. At 67, you know what I know why? Because when he pops up or strikes out in a big spot, you know what he does? He pouts. He goes there. He doesn't like Paul O'Neill, like throw something and get really angry. I'm going to fix this. I have hope for him. I think he's a nice man. I just think that he's gotten a little carried away with his own New York celebrity.
No, he's not Matt Harvey.
No, he's not Matt Harvey in that way. But when he's doing, it's the money store and I'm Pete Alonso.
Well, that's what you see as a bad.
Come to Applebee's. No, too many damn commercials, man. Too many commercials. Buy these shoes. That's Pete Alonso. Come to this steakhouse. I'm telling you, that's what it is in New York. He's on every frickin' commercial. It doesn't serve him. I don't care how much money he's making from them. He needs to focus on his job. His job. That's how I feel. It took Aaron Judge 4 years to start doing commercials. Pete Alonso was the darling of New York. I'm telling you, it's going to be a minute before he really figures it out. I can see him going back up this list, but his 220 average, even with 15 home runs or 14 home runs that he hit in 60 games, I just didn't trust him. He did not serve. He did not come through.
I want to ask you guys on your respective lists, and we'll start with DVR. Actually, wait, DVR, I have it in front of me, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Where do you have Pete Alonso on your list? Let's do among first basemen, I guess, instead of overall.
Among first basemen. Let's see.
You got him fifth. Tab.
Fifth among first basemen?
Yeah, you got him fifth among first basemen.
Yeah, 41 overall. He's clustered with Luke Voigt, Vlad Jr.
I mean, LeMahieu snuck. LeMahieu's in your first base rankings, but I don't know if a lot of leagues are going to have him there, right?
He played 10 games. Yeah. Should be enough coming off the shortened season. I mean, you're getting a lot more average from LeMahieu with a lot less power. That's pretty clear. I think with Jose Abreu, people thought I had Jose Abreu too low. And my response to that was, did everything not go perfectly for him in the shortened season? Like, yes, the lineup around him is better, and he is a really good hitter, but I think that's probably about as good as it can get for Jose Abreu over a 60-game stretch. So, you know, normal regression and a longer season, he's still going to be really good at the position. I just don't know if he's going to be an elite player overall. Yeah, I mean, I think looking at the ADP, Alonso, that's pretty much where the market has him too. The market likes Voit a little better and has Alonso versus Vlad Jr. as a early 2021 toss-up.
I'll take Vlad.
I love Vlad. But I love him. I think I could see a lot of my leagues next year having both Vlad and Pete Alonso. Assuming that Vlad... Well, actually, I wouldn't even assume that. I don't mind having one at first and one at corner, but Vlad maybe getting third base eligibility back and thinking, like, you know, in 2 weeks I'll have that.
I think the thing that I like about getting a corner early, especially, I mean, first base thins out quite a bit. So
Freddie Freeman, yo.
Freddie Freeman. Perpetually so underrated, I guess, in the early rounds, right? Because he doesn't steal bases.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always take him at the wheel. I always try to take him at 15 or 16. Because you get that first base locked up. Luke Voit, this will be the first year where I do not get Luke Voit anywhere, because I usually get him everywhere, but I will not. I'm not going to.
Because you don't want him, you're not going to pay up for him.
I'm not going to pay up for him. I mean, you know, I got him for $7 last year, $8 last year, $4 last year, you know, and I think I paid 15 for him in AL labor, but he was incredibly key to the team. The guy who I want to talk about on DVR's list is Eric Hosmer. Come on, man. You got Josh Bell ahead of Eric Hosmer and Miguel Sano and Rhys Hoskins and Carlos Santana and Trey Mancini and Christian Walker. I love you. I really object.
So we are at a point where we believe that Eric Hosmer in 2020 is the new version of Eric Hosmer that we're going to get going forward, or something close to that, as opposed to King Wormburner just smashing ground balls that we saw for the last 6 years.
I'm telling you, the next 5 years are the best 5 years of Eric Hosmer's career, period.
All right. Let's keep this going. Yeah.
Wait, so where did he go in the dynasty ranks? If the next 5 years are the best 5 years of his career, you got him at 175. You got him behind Josh Bell. Didn't I just get dunked on for that?
But wait a minute. That is a different format, right? Bell is 26, 27.
28.
Hosmer's 31, 32.
Yeah,
that's a number of years there. So that's the difference there. But for maybe you're right. Look, I had people. There were two guys that I consulted this year, this time on my dynasty rankings.
Neither of us.
I consulted.
That's
no.
Well,
it's not. DVR's done his own, and you're focused on football. It was.
Well,
it was Cushing.
Over. Well, pretty much over.
And James Anderson, ding, that's it. And both of them gave me so much crap. Would you stop with your Eric Hosmer nonsense? No. No. Will you stop with your Luke Voit nonsense, Ian? No. No. I'm telling you, Eric Hosmer, under the radar. I'm hurting myself because I know everyone's going to drive up his price now for me. He's going to continue to grow. He was a little dude. He was a little skinny dude. He's now a big, strong dude. He's the leader of that team, along with Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis. He's going to play every single day. He's going to hit home runs. He's going to drive in runs. He's going to be in the middle of that very strong lineup. Huge upside for Eric Hosmer. He's going to be a top, not top 20. He's going to be a top 10 first baseman next year.
Tell you what, man.
Period.
You'll be the only person making this argument, I think. And I've been there. I know that. And it's going to be a good feeling when this pans out for you.
Well, I mean, okay. I'm good with that. I'm good with that. I'm good with
no,
being
it's not
the
an
guy
insult.
Who,
why are you laughing?
No. I don't take it as an insult.
DVR's trying to rile you up, man.
No, he's not. I riled him. I said, really? I went at him like we were on Schitt's Creek. I mean, you know, I was playing. If, by the way, has anyone watched Schitt's Creek?
No, that was obscure. Lost on me.
Guys, no. Don't. I'm telling you, it's the stuff. It's like the best thing. And when I first tried to watch it, segues are for children. When I first tried to watch Schitt's Creek, I watched it. It was like a year ago or something. And everyone's like, you got to watch Schitt's Creek. I was like, all right, I'll watch it. And I was like, this is annoying. They're all mean. Eugene Levy, like the kid, Daniel Levy. Like
nepotism,
what?
Right?
Yeah, total. That's what I was watching. I watched like six episodes. I love the mom, O'Hara, Catherine O'Hara, well, one of them. And I was watching. I was like, I don't get it. I'm out. Then the Emmy Awards happened during quarantine. They won Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Show, Best Writing, Best Directing. And I went to Nicole, my better half. I said, you know, I think we probably should start watching that show again. Watched it again. Boom. If you can stick with it, it's better than Turn by a lot.
Don't say like, that. Don't say that.
No, it's. I'm telling you. Please.
I think it seems like a pretty apples to oranges sort of comparison in what those two shows are trying to accomplish.
It's about as orange. That's like apples to prunes. It's that much of a difference. But it's really good, guys. And so we just finished the series last night after binging it, which is fun, man. You can get into a show like that. And you know what we did? We started watching it again immediately as soon as it was over.
No, you're joking, man.
No, I'm serious.
It's like you play Mario Brothers again after you beat it.
Right, exactly. Because now what you do is you watch it from the beginning and you realize, oh, how annoying you were. I just didn't know you yet. You know? It's like I didn't know you yet. It's like Alex Cushing. It's like he's really annoying, but when you really get to know him, you're like, oh, you're actually lovely. You take some time.
I don't know.
See what I did? Yeah. he's my boy. That's my boy.
No, I mean, I know about Alex Cushing. He's great. I don't know about the show.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm telling you. Well, all right.
I mean, can you pick it up? Because everyone says you got to watch the first season and then just get through that, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get that for The Wire, you know, because they're story building. But for this, I don't know. I'm just not.
Why don't you start with season three?
Can I do that?
I think Ian's exactly right, though, with Schitt's Creek. When you start watching it, none of the characters are endearing in any way. Mm-hmm. And for at least five or six episodes, you're sitting there and you keep saying, why am I even bothering with this?
Why am I bothering?
But then it does turn a corner. Probably when season two begins, you start to find things about the characters that you like. The character development on the show is really good, too.
It was the last moment of season one. Here's what happened. In the last moment of season one.
Can we get a spoiler alert?
It's not really. The camera goes on a close-up of the son, David. David goes on a close-up on David. And I turned to Nicole. I was like, stuff. It's about him. He's the star. It's about David. I didn't realize it was about David the whole time. And once you realize it's about him, it's kind of like in Turn when you're like, oh, wow, it's about, I can't even say that. But in that moment.
That's such a hard comparison. It's almost impossible.
No. But people, it's like when you know who to follow on a show, it becomes a lot simpler. Like on Turn, people didn't know who to root for. And then Washington showed up and everyone was like, oh, we're rooting for George Washington. I get it. He's the hero. Let's go. You know, everyone who's on Washington's team, follow them. Once you realize that it's David, it's about David. And I'm not saying Turn's about Washington. It's not. But once you're following.
I mean, it is.
It's not, but it contextualizes the show. Because before Washington arrives, the first part of the first season, you kind of like the British more than you like the Americans. It's like, wait a minute, am I supposed to be rooting for the British?
Well, the cabbage farmer guy seems kind of squirrely. I don't like him that much.
Exactly. That's the point, is that the cabbage farmer is, it's like, am I supposed to be rooting for this guy? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's working for George Washington. Yes, I am following that guy. I am rooting for that guy. It gives you a rooting interest. Once you realize the show is about the son and the son finding joy and going from being this like horribly like bitter human who like hates everything in the world, and then he like melts and falls in love and like finds a purpose and love in life, it changes everything. It's really magnificent. It's a wonderful show. I highly recommend it, and it's free on Netflix. It's right up there with Midnight Run.
We got to watch that together at some point.
I think so.
We got to get around to that.
Yeah, think.
Yes.
This is the fine stuff you get.
Whoop. That's perfect timing. Yeah. DVR.
Yep.
Just take us somewhere.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. So wait, here's a question for you guys, actually. And this is a weird one, but just bear with me. So I'm, you know, the cards thing. But we're going somewhere with it. There are these Bowman cards that had like a turkey on them. I was searching for Topps holiday cards and I landed on these Bowman turkey prospects, which were out of 35. And I mean, just going through, I'm like, okay, using my fantasy knowledge, which of these are underpriced? And there's Ryland Bannon, who nobody talks about. The card's under $10. He's been pretty good in his career, and it's the Orioles, and with the Orioles, basically everything's wide open. Ian, I want to know where you had him in your dynasty ranks, and like, is this like a total under the radar prospect who nobody's talking about, but has put up pretty decent numbers, and who's
please spell his name
Ryland R-Y-L-A-N Bannon B-A-N-N-O-N.
I'm sorry. He's under the Condor.
Look him up. Like there's,
I'm looking him up right now. Yeah. I have not heard of Rylan Bannon. And I apologize to everyone who's like,
well, I didn't
seriously?
Either until I was scrolling through the car. I'm like, who's Rylan Bannon? Why is it like $9?
RylanBannon.
Yeah.
Okay. Rylan Bannon, third base, 5'8", 24 years old. Yeah. Okay.
Got some power. Hold on. Got some average.
I mean,
no.
Okay.
Here's a good scouting report. Here's one. It's this from Fangraphs. Eric Longenhagen does a great work over there. Rylan Bannon was an eighth rounder, by the way, out of Xavier in 2017. Here's the scouting report from Eric. He isn't especially graceful, nor does he have great hands or actions. Bannon plays an adequate effort-based second and third base. More importantly, he can hit. His low load enables him to lift pitches with regularity, but he's also short back to the ball and tough to beat with velocity. This becomes especially true with two strikes. When Bannon chokes up and spoils tough pitches, he runs deep counts and walks a bunch. He's going to hit a ton of doubles and play a shift-aided spot on the infield. That's a big league role player. So
yeah, that's what it looks like to me. It's exactly what I would say. He's like Gordon Beckham to me.
I don't know, man. It seems like he has a little more power, a little more average potential. I mean, I guess he's short, but so is Jose Altuve.
Yeah, without question.
Let's put him at 500. Come on, for the show.
Put it what?
Just put him at 500.
Yeah, put him at 500 for the show.
Sure, because the list only goes to 400. So sure.
I thought you did top 500.
I mean, okay, but no, don't buy that.
But they move Mountcastle to the outfield.
Mountcastle's going to play somewhere, but Trey Mancini's coming back, which I found interesting on DVR's list. You've got Trey Mancini ahead of Eric Hosmer. Trey Mancini.
Are you changing the subject on me, Mr. Khan?
Well, no. Go ahead. Orioles, I'm joking. Go ahead. And Orioles and Mountcastle. But Mancini, I had a tough time ranking him because I like Mancini, but you know, coming back from what he's coming back from seems challenging. And I thought I had him pretty high at 288. But I think that's pretty accountable to where you are, where you have him. Would you agree, DVR?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a little higher than most because I think playing time is more stable for him than it is for Christian Walker. And I guess I'm a skeptic on Eric Hosmer hitting the ball in the air enough to get to as much power as he was getting to this year. So that's where, you know, the difference is for me compared to some guys that ADP seems to like better. I mean, if Mancini's healthy going into spring training and he's out there doing everything with his teammates and seems like himself, I would imagine he shoots up 50 picks or so in ADP. I don't think he's going to stay outside the top 200 because it's a great place to hit. He's shown he can do it before. The only question at this point is health, and so far everything seems to be going really well with his recovery.
I got another guy on this list that I really have to ask you about. Brandon, two guys. Brandon Belt at 27. I actually threw him on my dynasty list at 390 something. Where'd I have him? 389. I want to ask you about Brandon Belt because I actually think it's similar to Hosmer, not as good, clearly. 389 to 175 is quite a big difference, but he still has another year on his contract. He's starting to grow into his body. It's these like little thin guys who like get a little bigger as they age and the power comes along. Terrible ballpark, but I just feel like Brandon Belt might actually become Brandon Belt. Am I crazy?
I feel like you're talking about like we don't know who he is. You know what I mean? Like, he's been around long enough, and now with Joey Bart, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, how's he going to get playing time? You going to make him a full-time outfielder?
No, I think he's going to play first base.
All right.
I think he'll play first base. All right, so let's not talk about Brandon Belt, because the guy I really want to talk about is Jared Walsh.
Well, no, hold on. Don't let my opinion just shut down the Brandon Belt talk, because I think he's pretty intriguing. Yeah. But it seems like every year we do this Brandon Belt thing, and then you know, just trade him to Colorado, and everyone will love him.
Yeah, that's true. There's two guys on this list that we are wildly disparate on. Jared Walsh and Jaime Candelario. Now, I think we've talked about Candelario on the show, but I don't know that we've talked about Walsh on the show. You just don't buy it?
I just don't see where he plays with the Angels. I like some of the changes he made. Fangraphs had a really nice breakdown of some changes he made with his swing. When he first came up, I think in 2019, there was a really busy swing that created a lot of unnecessary movement, and that brought the K rate up. He cleaned that up a lot. So the K rate improvement might be more sustainable than it appears just based on like the magnitude of improvement. Power's legit.
Without question. I mean, look at his minor. Take a page out of DeFino's book.
Yeah.
If you look at his 2019 AAA numbers in 382 at-bats in AAA, He hit 36 home runs. He had an OPS of 1.1. And then came up to the majors this year, and in 99 at-bats had 9 home runs and had an OPS of 0.971. Is there not a spot for him, you don't think? I mean, anywhere?
I think there should be, but they're still stuck with the Pujols contract. Ohtani, if he's trying to pitch, has to be in the DH mix. He won't be in the outfield mix. It's just such a crowded situation. That's what's working against them. If they can, you know, move somebody, like if they were to find a way to trade Justin Upton, create a spot in the outfield, shuffle some things around, I would move Jared Walsh up. I think the core skills are interesting.
Wouldn't Walsh take the spot of Adele in the outfield if they're trying to win baseball games?
You think they're going to give up on Adele this early?
No, I don't think they're going to give up, but I just think Jared Walsh was in, as soon as he came up and he started hitting all of those ridiculous home runs, he just played every single day and they found a spot for him. I mean, it's like Dylan Moore. It's like you come up from the minor leagues and you succeed so wildly, you find a spot for him. I think he's an interesting player coming into next year. I mean, I have him at 235 on my list. I have Jaime Candelario at 234 on the list, which I think we discussed on this.
We've definitely talked about. I've written Candelario into a billion rundowns. I mean, I guarantee you, we've said his name many, many times.
But I mean, if you look at the Candelario numbers, to me, I know it's a short season, but 185 at bats. We know he's going to play every day. He had an OPS of 872. 7 home runs, a 297 average. It's pretty freaking good. And his strikeout to walk ratio is pretty good. I mean, 20 walks to 49 strikeouts. And what am I missing on this? Why are we so far apart on Candelario?
As good as he was in 2020, I'm still not convinced that he's totally secure with playing time. It's kind of like the Colin Moran situation to me. I like what I saw. I think there are reasons that you could say they're going to just keep it cheap and play those guys in those situations, but it's a lot of downside on the playing time front. I think with Walsh, I'm looking at the first base rankings. I mean, everybody I have ranked ahead of him should play more. The one exception is Ryan McMahon, and I think McMahon projects to play more than Walsh, even if they're both part-time guys to start the season.
Okay. I mean, okay. But if they play, those are just two guys that Walsh and Jaime Candelario is just a guy that I like. You know, I like him as a cheap corner infield option. He was good last year. He was hitting the ball hard. I mean, I should look at his hard hit rate and stuff. Let me do that while you guys talk about the next
move. What do you want us to talk about?
I don't know. Anything you got? What else is on the list?
I'm done. I'm ready to close. We can close the show.
Well, we can't. Not yet.
You know, Jazz Chisholm brought up by DVR. I thought, you know, Marlins were a weird team last year. But I thought that, you know, maybe if we had a normal 162-game season, he could have made an impact and played maybe half the games and done really well. Also, as we learned last time, his cameo, only $22. $20.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good, right? Him and Duplantier are two underrated cameos. if only there's some way to get him and have him increase in value. But DVR, like Jazz Chisholm, I don't think he's high. Like you wrote in here that he's ultimate high risk, high reward, but is he really high risk? Is that like a strikeout rate doesn't walk a lot thing? Or is it because he seems like he's has a decently low floor to me.
I think he walks enough to where he could be a low average, okay OBP guy if it goes wrong. And defensively, he's good enough, especially if he moves off shortstop. He's definitely good enough to play second base. I think he could stick at shortstop and just be one of those guys that plays a ton and gets stuck in the bottom third of the lineup and does okay because he contributes in a little bit in every category. I just wonder, is he locked in for a job to begin the season, or is he going to be in this group of players? Sort of like, I mean, Joe Adele had a negative 1.3 WAR. Joe Adele's going back to AAA to start the season. That's happening. Jazz Chisholm improved a lot after the trade from Arizona at the AA level. Got the K rate down during his brief time with the Marlins. Never played a AAA because we didn't have AAA this year. You know, was just a replacement level guy when he came up. Looked a little overmatched with the K rate jumping up. Are we going to have to wait a month or longer before he comes back up in Miami to claim one of those spots? They got Isan Diaz. They can use Miguel Rojas and John Birdie as fillers if they need to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
that's my short-term concern with Jazz, even though I certainly see the long-term appeal.
Speaking of long-term appeal, can I just read you some of these numbers from Jaime Candelario, please, on exit velocity, XBA, and things like this?
Listen, I'd like you to, I just want to note that you're talking to someone who's been a long-time fan, believer, fantasy drafter of Jaime. I think it's Jaime, actually. I'm surprised DVR hasn't subtly corrected you on that yet.
Well, let's try it again. On Jaime. Nothing? Okay, exit velocity, 73%.
There it is.
What did he say?
It is Jamer. I thought it was Heimer. It's Jamer.
Jamer. Okay, so I'm so high on him, I can't even pronounce his darn name right. Jamer? Jamer? That's it? Jamer? What a Jamer. Weird name. Yep. All right, Jamer it is. Exit velocity, 73. Hard hit, 86. XWOBA, 72. Barrel, 68%. X slugging, 70. XBA, 78. Walk rate, 58. Whiff, 41. K, 42. Sprint speed, 50. Outs above average, 69. Those are above average everywhere. The underlying numbers back up what I saw. It's what I saw watching him hit the ball where I went, yeah, look at that. Ooh, look at it go. Yikes. Booyah. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
I wonder if that had anything to do if like the hitting coach kind of helped him figure something out. Now that hitting coach is obviously gone. I wonder like how that's going to change a lot of the Detroit stuff.
I just think he's growing up. It's this whole freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. He's now smack in his sophomore year. He's struggled through early parts of his career. He's growing into himself. He was a decent prospect. We certainly knew about him coming up. And now he's coming into his, he's coming into it. You know, he's coming into his prime. I think there's a couple of good years ahead. I really do.
I was expecting big things from him. And then this was the year when I kind of gave up on him, actually.
Which is understandable. But now is a time where I'm telling you, other people are giving up on
him. Christian Stewart was the guy I kind of moved over to. And then it was a bad year for Christian Stewart.
Yeah. I have Jerks and Profar. What number do you think I have Jerks and Profar at, guess?
In Dynasty.
83.
Well, no. He's lower than that. I saw him. Was he in the 180, 200 range, something like that?
188, baby. 188. What do you think of that, 100? DVR? Is that still? But what do you think of that?
Appropriately ranked. You got him next to Tommy Edman, who's a couple of years younger. They both do a little bit of everything.
Oh yeah.
I still think Profar is more of just a guy, but because he runs, he's a guy that helps us a lot in fantasy.
Mm-hmm. And former number one prospect. Here's a guy that I think I'm wrong on, but I didn't know what to do, and I think I dropped him some, but not enough. Gavin Lux. I have him at 53. I think that's too high. And it's my freaking list.
I don't know about that. I mean, it was weird that they just shot him down to the alternate site this year when everyone thought he was going to be the man. Mm-hmm. But he had some stretch time. And then he finished off all right. He's still like a top prospect.
Imagine you had Gavin Lux in RDI, and I offered you Marco Luciano straight up. You have Luciano ranked right below him. If you're not playing for right now, do you take Luciano?
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah, then you probably got to move Lux down a little bit.
Yeah, but I would take. I think I would. I would certainly take Lux over Starling Marte. I always have Starling Marte. I always have DVR in my head about Starling Marte. Remember that good fight we had over Starling Marte? And I was like, oh, wait, wow, you're really right. I'm wrong on that. Oh, boy. Yeah, all right. So Gavin Lux, somewhat appropriate. And now here's another question that Cushing gave me some crap on. And he's a Met fan.
You didn't even try.
Well, no, no, no.
You didn't even try.
How many times? No, but I mean, it's like how many, you know, another show to watch, by the way, Segways Are for Children, is The Mandalorian. Is fantastic on Disney Plus. Watch The Mandalorian from season one all the way through and then watch. And it sounds like I watch a lot of television. I don't. I'm just telling you the shows that I watch. The other player that I wanted to ask about was Michael Conforto. I have him at 57. I originally had him higher. And the dude just said, he's like, I watch him every day. He's not that good. I'm like, he kind of is. Where are you guys on Michael Conforto as I look up his underlying numbers?
I love Conforto. I know there's a weird Mets thing where you're like, Nimmo or Conforto? I'm Conforto.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Is it possible that both Conforto and Dominic Smith are actual better hitters than Pete Alonso, even though Alonso clearly has more power?
Yes, 100%. I think so.
That we'll be talking about Michael Conforto as a good fantasy player 5 years from now, and Alonso's going to be one of those really cheap first basemen that is low average, still decent power, kind of like the way we think about Jay Bruce now.
I was going to say Joey Gallo.
Wow, Joey Gallo.
I don't think his downside is quite like Gallows because the K rate is much more under control.
I mean, but even Gallows not cheap though. You know what I mean? Like, it's still Gallows. Still, you want him. You pay up for him.
I mean, Dominic Smith's underlying numbers are remarkable. Hard hit 83, X slug 94, barrel 86, XW OBA 92, XBA 95. I mean, those are spectacular numbers on Dominic Smith. I mean, again, I just watch with my eyes and I see these guys. I watch every highlight. I try to watch every highlight and I watch them hit. And it's just like, oh, if you're hitting the ball like that, it's going to show up in the numbers. And for Conforto, XW OBA 85, barrel 73, X slugging 73, XBA 82. Walk rate 66. I mean, he's a really good hitter. And then when we go to Pete Alonso, who I'm going to really, you know, I'm going to put my money down that is not going to be the guy that everyone thought that he was, including me.
He had one bad year in a shortened coronavirus season.
You are right. And if I look at these numbers, they're really not bad. His exit velocity 73, hard hit 61.
Look at his minor league batting
69.
Average.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of weird stuff happened this year. I see you bring him up to 78.
Well, he's at 67. Oh, so
I see. Bring him up to 35.
No. He hasn't earned that. He hasn't earned that. I mean, there's a guy who, Brandon Lau. I said that right?
That's
Brandon
Lau.
No, it's Nate Lowe. It's Lau. I'm pretty sure. And DVR didn't correct me, so I'm good. Brandon Lau.
He doesn't correct you. His next full sentence will have the correct pronunciation.
It's true. You're right. He wouldn't correct me that way. He's too much of a Wisconsin gentleman to really kind of like correct me right there. But Brandon Lau, now I'm nervous. Brandon Lau's numbers, underlying numbers, are remarkable. I had a little trouble because he struggled so much in the playoffs of putting him as high as I did, which was at 63. But I really did. I think I've landed in the right spot for him. DVR, do you have anything that you want to say pronunciation-wise or anything else?
It's Brandon Lau.
Okay.
Ian.
Winner.
The K rate scared me away after 2019. At least it kept me from thinking that there was a level like the one we just saw in 2020. I'm not sure if there's a lesson to be learned there or if there's some negative regression around the corner for Brandon Lau. I'm kind of curious, of all the players the Rays could trade this winter, Blake Snell's name came up in rumors, I think, on Monday. I think Brandon Lau would be a kind of an interesting player for them to trade away. They'd get quite a bit back in return for him.
Man, I don't know. You know what? I'm so sick. The Rays give me fatigue. The Rays and the A's give me fantasy fatigue.
Good. I agree. I try to stay away, except Lau was signed to, they bought out his arbitration years. So that changes the equation. Always look at what the team is doing. If a team buys the player and buys them out, like Marco Gonzalez, you know it's somebody you want. By the way, Kikuchi made the list. I would say that had a lot to do with Nando DeFino. There's a lot of Nando DeFino love on this list. I don't know if you caught that, Nando.
Well, I've only heard about four players on the list, so not yet.
Well, if you actually look at the list, if you see the list, you'll see there's a lot of there's a Shogo Akiyama, which I got a lot of crap for. I said I don't care. I'm keeping him on because I heard something from a very smart guy.
There you go.
Lewis Brinson makes the list at 398, which is somewhat absurd, but still I'm happy to do it.
Lewis Brinson had a great. I mean, well, I guess I can't speak out of both sides of my mouth, but
I mean,
when they took a couple days off after the shooting just to say, screw it, we're not doing this. When Brinson came back, and this is a very Ian thing, Brinson kind of took on like the leadership of that team at that moment. And he was the face. He was kind of like the spokesman.
Was he really?
After that, Brinson went not nuts, but I mean, he like fulfilled his potential like at that moment. This is a very, very Ian-y thing that I thought you might have caught, but I guess I don't know.
I've never heard my name referred to that way, an Ian-y thing. I kind of like that.
It's kinda nice,
I don't
mind
that at all. Yeah. I kind of like it. It's an Ian-y thing. It's actually, the more I hear it, the less I like it. But I think it's certainly of note. I am excited about Lewis Brinson. He is moving into his sophomore year, and maybe he becomes a ball player. And if he does, there's real upside there.
Well, I mean, he's already old. Just, that's the problem. He's 26.
He's not. He's 26, but... But I mean, he only has 821 plate appearances in the major leagues, 751 at bats. So he once you get to 1200 at bats, after that, I'll say, all right, yeah, he's old, but not old, but he's been around. I still think there's upside here. I do. DVR, do you think there's any chance on upside with Lewis Brinson? You probably know him better than we do.
Yeah, just where he goes, the power speed combo alone is worth the late dart. It's a what could go right late round pick or end game option.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll take it.
Absolutely. I'll take it too.
Yeah.
That
sounds like unfettered love for Lewis Brinson from DVR right there.
That's pretty unfettered. Good words.
Fettered.
Good words out of you, my friend.
Fettered.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to see the Gary Marshall video, you got to pony up.
You know what your problem is? You can't say this at the end because people drop off.
Why?
Well, you got to say it at the start.
No, I don't. Okay. Because they don't get their, if they've dropped off, they don't get their vote. I don't care about their vote. I want them, if they've been on the show and they've been listening to the show and they stay for the lack of segues. Come on.
I mean, you should really stay for the segues or the lack of segues. But I mean, Ian is the king of segues when he wants to.
Lack of segues.
When someone else is talking. Yeah, he finds a way to segue back into his point very nicely.
Both of you guys are doing regular sports podcasts. I don't get to do regular sports podcasts. It's been 2 weeks. I've been super juicy and excited to get back on the air with you guys. So, yes, indeed, it's true.
You're right. You got your side podcast?
I do, the political podcast. So only a few more weeks of that. Once things have transitioned, that will be it, hopefully. Because
Well, you guys don't care about the midterm elections? It's pretty messed up.
It's really quite a bit of time before the midterm elections, and everyone needs a frickin' break, including me. What I don't need a break from is my time on Under the Radar with these two fine gentlemen. Yeah.
If you didn't notice, Ian's using that we got to end the show segue because it's been about an hour.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I got a 1 o'clock.
Oh, that's right. I got a hard out. We gotta go.
Yeah, I got a hard out.
All right,
We all got a hard out. So that's why I'm a gentle push towards our gracious leader. That is you, Nando DeFino, Godfather of all.
Please stop with that. Let's do this. Let's end this show on a high note for the man with the greatest view of all time, Ian Khan.
Goodbye, my friends. I look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks. Happy Thanksgiving. Stay safe.
For the other man who introduced me to French silk pie, and check out his ratings coming up this week.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Take it easy. Check out the Mount Vernon shop, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye. Good talk. Good talk.